Good morning and welcome to the Monday edition of Down to Brass Tacks. Today is the 22nd day of June 2020 and my name is Peter Wickham. And it's good to be with you this morning, myself and Miss Michelle Brathwaite. We are here with you until 2 p.m. Happy to have the opportunity again this week to open the batting, so to speak. And this is going to be an interesting program. We lost about 4 minutes due to my own fault. My apologies for holding you up somewhat. I had some challenges unplanned this morning. But we will make up for it, and I promise you that that will be 4 less minutes that I will make prefatory remarks. So we will get to your calls at 10 minutes after the hour of 10, without fear. So, you know the numbers, 434-1790. You can also email me at peter.w.wickham@gmail.com, or you can use the chat, 266-IVOB. My comments this morning really focus almost exclusively on this whole question of Nelson statue. And I think I've said before that, to my mind, the Nelson statue, or the Black Lives Matter movement in the United States of America, which has focused attention on several of the regressive aspects of their own society, gives us the opportunity to focus on some of the regressive aspects of our own society. And unsurprisingly, the whole question of Nelson has arisen, and people have spoken about the need, in light of the removal of the statue of Cecil Rhodes from Oxford University, in light of other matters, there's a feeling now that we also need to consider that we need to look at removing Nelson's statue from Barbados as well. I've already weighed in on that issue regarding my own personal views. I'm not of the throw him in the wharf mentality. I am more inclined to say put him in the museum along with all of the other historical artifacts that we should not forget. But at the same time, to have a statue in the middle of Bridgetown certainly is a celebration that I think is unworthy of a person like Nelson. So this brings to focus the comments that were made by John King, cryptic as they were, suggesting that we need not to do to others as they had done to us, suggesting almost that we have some type of obligation to do good by Nelson, which has created some concern. One of his colleagues, cabinet colleagues, has suggested that he warrants a chance for these unprovoked remarks. But what is more interesting to me is that we have the position of the Prime Minister, who has said that she, like me, has her own view on what should happen. She reminded that the issue was the subject of a national consultation, and she, however, believes that before anything further should be done, we should have further national consultation. Now, this is my challenge. I think everybody here knows that I like Prime Minister Motley, and I'm one of the big admirers of Prime Minister Motley. But I think you also know that I tend to have strong views on matters regardless. And this is my thing. I found that one of the unfortunate realities of having what one would call a lopsided government, in which you have an overwhelming quantity of political capital, that you don't often realize, and I don't believe that our Prime Minister realizes, that there is a need for her to use that political capital to advance a progressive agenda. We had the same thing with Prime Minister Arthur during the Republic debate, where he, a self-professed Republican, moved to a position where he said, I am supporting that change. However, I do not believe it is wise, in light of the fact that we have such a lopsided situation, for me to force the issue. When part of the reason that you have a lopsided situation is so that you can force issues like this. Let's remember, a lopsided government in the United States was what resulted in the National Insurance Scheme. So a lopsided government, in some instances where you have an abundance of political capital, should be used towards good ends. And this is the second time. I remember Prime Minister Motley, when we were talking about issues of the decriminalization of homosexuality and gay marriage, which subsequently came up, she expressed the view that she had her own opinion, but she felt that no 30 people sitting in Parliament ought to make decisions in that regard. So now we have it again, where I am being told that no 30 people in Parliament ought to make decisions in regarding Nelson, and we should open it to national consultation. So my question is, to what end? I understand the need to balance your tremendous majority with the need to take into consideration the views of others. And I like the idea of consultation. I mean, no one likes consultation in public opinion more than I do, because that's how I make a living. I am a creature of public opinion. At the same time, however, I also believe that there comes a point where we have to ask ourselves, will we discuss this matter for another 5 years? Will we discuss it for another 10 years? Will 2010 come and will we still be discussing the need for discussion on the removal of Nelson statue? Or alternatively, will we take a position as a progressive government and just move it? So I am at a loss to understand what is the need for further consultation. The Prime Minister knows her own view on the matter, and it is progressive. The views of the vast majority of people in her administration are progressive on this issue. It is a progressive government. Do what progressive governments do and take action. We didn't have to wait for consultation regarding so many other things. Why this? And I am concerned that we are going to go down this road of endless consultation, an endless talk, an endless wasting of time. We have the power. We have the capacity. We are enlightened. Let's just do it and get it out of the way and stop this needless conversation about something that should not be happening. Why should we be protesting in a country that has been led by black progressive governments for the better part of this century? Well, last century, I should say. Why should we be having the need to have a conversation about whether we should be moving this man who has nothing to do with our national development from the central place that he locates? So I am at a loss. And as I said, I understand this is the second time I have seen this approach taken where the Prime Minister has progressive views but believes that those progressive views need to be subjected to wide conversation before a decision is taken. And I would say to her and others in her cabinet, you are easily one of the most progressive governments that this country has ever had. Use your political capital towards good end, and let's stop the talk. Down to brass tacks. 434-1790. Good morning.
Mr. Beckham, how are you?
I'm good, sir. And yourself?
Well, I was hoping for David Goy has some legs for him this morning, so but I got one or two for you, too.
I think he will be here with you on Monday coming.
Oh, he's...
So hold the legs, and you can distribute those legs on Monday.
Yeah, I got... No. I got some things I want to discuss with you.
Mm-hmm.
You happened to listen to early business this morning?
I did not, sir. Afraid not.
I find it strange that the Prime Minister of this country used Canada as her mark for importing labor and then were able to export. Now you told me I'm coming with this. Here in Barbados, we have a vast, I don't know if you guys agree or disagree. So if you guys agree or disagree, then let's have a conversation on it, okay? A vast majority of people in this country with vast amount of talent that you can find anywhere in the world. You agree or you disagree?
Yeah, I agree.
Mm. Good. Here it is that the Honorable Sir Ralph Busy Williams, you hear the words I use?
He was knighted.
The Honorable Sir Ralph Busy Williams.
Okay. Now, I'm not sure where the title comes from, but anyhow, I got the point. Right. Yeah.
Took it upon himself to take a transport war bus
mm-hmm.
and turn it into an electrical bus
mm-hmm.
in a copain. And this government.
It wasn't a copain.
Man, listen to me. The man is going to tell you, going to the war raft this morning.
And this you say it was a copain. It wasn't a copain.
Man, listen to me now.
All right, go ahead.
You was a copain. You put it in the garage.
Right.
The man need help. You want to tell me all of them buses I transport were that the man could take, or the bus running from the road.
Mm-hmm.
I met them into electrical buses that ain't fuck up busy. Every look I back, he tell you, but got real businesses, you know, mm-hmm. JetBlue, or JetRed, or whatever it's field. He ain't stopped there, he went for Burger King. He ain't stopped, he went for Digicel. Mm-hmm. What I'm saying, this man always looking out for a way of employing Bajans. Don't you think that this government should have given himself a spot of land or use the transport board, get rid of them workers, and let he employ people to take those buses and turn them into electrical buses? Yes or no? Let me get to
Well, in a yes or no question, but to start with, I don't think anybody needs to give Busy a spot of land, because Busy got several spots of lands knocking about the place, and the engineering plant that he used to convert the bus, I think, is large enough to accommodate others. The challenge is, you know how much it costs, sir?
He did not say, but
Yeah, the cost was impractical for a large scale conversion. The challenge is that the electrical buses that can be imported, the cost of those is significantly cheaper than the cost of his conversion. My understanding is that his conversion was an experiment, certainly to see whether it could be done, and then to see whether in the future you can do larger numbers of buses at a reduced cost. Because as you would appreciate, sir, the more of this you do, the cheaper it becomes. At this stage, my understanding is that the cost of conversion was significantly greater than would allow for the transport board to make that kind of massive investment. Over time, the cost will come down. And I do believe, sir, that there are conversations ongoing regarding the ability to be able to do this cheaper. What you normally would do when you do a project like this is that you do it, you study it, you look at the costs, you look at ways in which costs can be reduced. So let's say, for example, if you are buying one of these converters that is used, what would be the cost of buying a dozen? And if you can bring that cost down, then it makes the idea of planning for conversions in the future practical. So it is not a yes or no answer. And my understanding is that there is no fundamental disagreement between the Transport Board, government, and Busy Williams regarding the way forward. It was an experiment that has paid dividends. And from this point onward, they will have to see how they can collaborate. But the challenge, I think, now is that people need buses on the road almost immediately, and the time and the cost wouldn't make it practical for them to do, let's say, convert 50 or half dozen or anything. So at this stage, is that an acceptable response for you, sir?
Well, I might have to get set up a call, Mr. Ellis, let you do your homework. So I probably will have to call Busy later on and sit down and get the facts straight and come back again. Now, in the Saturday Sun, June the 6th, back page. Boss prayers. CDB director sees it as a win-win for government and workers. That was in the Saturday Sun back page. However, in the Sunday Sun, page 5A, health prices could crowd boss plans. And Mr. Gwinnett said, this is the gentleman from the IMF that we have here on loan, or we are paying him. I don't know which one, because you don't get much transparency when it comes to certain things in this country.
All right, there's many points.
Say, the longer that the boss, that the health crisis with the coronavirus continues, it will pose a cloud over boss. Now, my question is, we have boss both here before. A government change and the change the time limit. We got coronavirus, which might be around for another 5 or 6 years, which I hope will not happen. Which means that these people that take it could be in some trouble also. You agree, or you want to bring the Sandy Sun call? I buy Sandy Sun, but I don't know if...
I think one of the things we established in the last conversation is that, in the last conversation about basically investments, is that all investments carry risk. Investments with government carry the lowest risk, but all investments will carry risk. So the BOSS program, there is an element of risk involved, there's no question about it.
Right. Now, this is my last point. Mr. Akani McDowell said last week that it was about saving jobs. Mm-hmm. I also heard those familiar words in 2018, and people still lost their job. So what confidence do we have in any union leader in this country? You want to say, you want to say something before I tell the last thing?
Mm-mm. No, I mean, I just think, sir, that whenever you make these comments about the current situation, you have to appreciate the extent to which it is unprecedented and what differentiates this one from all other economic crises that we have faced in 91, 81, 2008, and currently. This is a different type of economic crisis that is been motivated by factors that have absolutely nothing to do with the performance of any government, past or present.
Right. And I want you to read the Sandy Sandwich, the pizza, and another thing before I go. There are certain words.
What do you think?
Good. Me? I read it too fast, book that there. But what I would tell you is this. There are certain words that in future, you say that the last government, there should be shame and that sort of thing to run.
But I didn't. Did I say words, shame?
What words do you use?
I didn't think it was advisable.
But you didn't say that it would be shameless of them to come back. That they got, oh, you said they got hell come back, they won't have no shame.
I don't know. Maybe I did say. I don't know. Maybe I did say. Maybe that's the language I use.
Right, but those words. I mean, there are certain words that people should keep out of their.
I would prefer that. Yeah. So anyhow, but what you said, you don't like the use of the term.
But you use the word. Mm-hmm. So you should also remember that that word should also apply to you.
In what regard?
Just leave it as that.
No, in what regard?
But no, but you
shame usually indicates that one has done something about which one should be embarrassed, ashamed, or for which one should apologize. If I have in the past done something which carries any of those attributes, I would be more than happy to apologize for such. But I can't think of anything I've done recently for which shame would be associated. I am happily married, and I am unashamed in that regard.
But if
you believe that ought to be ashamed, I'm sorry to disappoint you that I have absolutely no shame where that. I'm quite proud of myself. I'm quite proud of my husband, and I am quite proud of the institution that we have built. If you have a problem with that, that's your problem, not mine. So I guess that's a good point at which we should end, since the producer is telling me we need to go to commercials. Thank you, sir. Good chatting with you. A good way to start the day. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Down to Brass Tacks. So WhatsApp writes, Mr. Wickham speaks only for himself. His so-called progressive views are backward and self-centered. Don't we all love it that today Barbados is a number one destination for British travelers? I note that they said a number one destination and not the number one destination, because I have been reminded only recently that the number one destination for British travelers is actually Mallorca in Spain. And that's the place that has opened this week. And British travelers have already started flocking to Mallorca. There is a misunderstanding in the minds of some people that the people who come to Barbados from the United Kingdom come to Barbados because of Nelson's statue, and the belief that Barbados is Little England or there is some Britishness that excites them. It is an untested theory, and it sounds like a lot of nonsense to me, but nonetheless, this is a belief in the minds of some people, and they also believe that if we were to move away from this Britishness, that maybe we would be less popular with British tourists. An unfounded allegation, however, it is the view clearly of many that will be making the rounds. Yeah, a couple of people have responded about the last call and his inappropriate comments. I am not prepared to engage this issue any further because I find that it's not going anywhere. Anyhow, is it? Donna Brastox, good morning.
Good morning, Peter.
Morning, sir. How are you doing?
This morning, you really got me good.
You ready?
Yeah. Last week, I saw two women on TV who said they're happily married. Mm-hmm. I laughed. I cried just the way you say that you're your husband. Happily married.
You find it as a laughing matter?
It's a laughing matter for me, but okay. When you stand by your ground, yeah. You have no quarrel with you making a choice. I called this morning, because I'm still laughing,
But this thing has clearly amused you considerably.
I called this morning to deal with an issue that we raised last week pertaining to national insurance. Now, I'm going to use the term again that was used by Hal Gullop. He spoke so passionate, but he did not know he was talking foolishness. Mm-hmm. Now, Peter, you're letting me down, though.
How is that?
You know why you're letting me down? We spoke already about the memoirs of Winter Crawford, and you tell me you have the book, right?
I do, yeah.
Yeah.
Which I haven't read yet.
Why you just allow people to come and speak things, and you have the knowledge, if you read it, to answer them. Now, I want to speak about the national insurance, and I want to speak about statutes. Now, let me start off. I said last week that the national insurance was introduced to Barbados by Winter Crawford and Elbar. Mm-hmm. Alerted caller called you and said they're talking foolishness that Earl Barr and corporate had disagreed. So when the National Insurance was introduced, corporate would not have anything to do with it. Now, I'm reading from page 152, and this going bring in a lot of subject matter. You remember, Gabby said he had nothing, he disliked Churchill. You can remember that?
I don't know. I told you I haven't read the memoirs.
No, I didn't read the memoirs at all, but what Gabby said when he was criticizing Churchill.
Yes, that's right, yeah.
Good.
Right, he said he admired the way he spoke, and so do I.
Now, let me go on page 152, then you get one, try and read it. Now, come and bring some information. This this program is an informative program, educational in other ways. On page 152, this is a quote from no other person than Winter Crawford. And he was a Federalist, and that was the reason why he and everybody got away with the, then to finish a little late. Now, listen, what... Okay, read it for you and for the public to hear. I had no time to go to Sherman. This is corporate speaking. Barrett certainly had no time because, in my opinion, the cabinet we had was not really very competent. Captain Ferguson had never been in politics before. We had Joy Edwards, who was Minister of Social Welfare. I had been working for years on a program for national insurance from the time that the Beveridge Plan was published in England during the war. Churchill had requested Sir William Beveridge to prepare a national insurance plan for Britain, as he said, to take care of people from the cradle to the grave. I prepared a similar plan for Barbados based on the Beveridge Plan, making the necessary adaptation and presenting it on the floor of the House. That was in 1948, but it was ignored.
Okay.
Now, when I said that Crawford was part of it, that the first time it was introduced, he went on and said, Barrett came to me one day, that when he was in Parliament now, because Congress, that was led by Crawford, was in Parliament before the Democratic Labour Party, and you should know that.
Mm-hmm.
Barrett came to me one day and said Edwards had had a national insurance project and had never got it before the Assembly. Since you work on it for years, work on it for me. I worked on that document. I was going to a meeting of the ILO, and I had finished it. And I asked Erskine, which would be Erskine Ward, to give it to the cabinet. He did, and later I put it through the House. There was much to be done, and the permanent secretary worked well. As a matter of fact, it was generally thought that Charlie Burton, R.G. Simmons, and others, and Bogle Williams, did the work. He also said that Abba was not very keen on those people that was appointed by Adam Gump. Now, that is clear now, as crystal clear as water, that the National Insurance was first introduced into Barbados by the same Winter Crawford, and not get away from the fact that now you're talking about COVID, and I said last week, if you want to talk about the National Insurance has carried the burden like the old donkey in this COVID issue right all around.
You said like the old donkey? Yes,
like
it has.
Old
it
donkey,
has.
Like an old donkey.
Yeah, it has.
It carried all the way.
Yeah.
So if you're speaking in terms of what a government did, that was the most progressive move that was ever made in Parliament. As a matter of fact, when Tom Adams got into government, he introduced the unemployment benefit that was attached to the same government that the people are getting today. And not only that, he also, we went as far as to have now the catastrophe fund within the same national insurance. Big business people borrow money out of the national insurance. And then finishing on national insurance. It was said that the building that was built by national insurance was for the savings bank. Now, let me ask you a question. Because you, as a lecturer, you still lecture at university?
No, not anymore. Not for a while, though.
Have you heard before that the National Insurance gave that building to the University of West Indies?
I had heard so, yeah. I had heard it had been bequeathed to the UWA under, I think it was, Kelmer was the Minister of Housing at the time, yeah.
But it was the National Insurance building. Yeah. It was known as the National Insurance building.
Yeah.
Because National Insurance give you something that is theirs.
I never understood the whole thing. Good, I mean, man, and it hasn't materialized, but I agree with you.
I don't want to come out. Some people say, yeah, I think I know everything, but I know by reading.
I'm not opposed to your argument that the National Insurance is easily one of the most progressive institutions of the last century. You're saying that it has to be squarely laid at the feet of Errol Barrow, and I don't have a difficulty with that analysis either. That's your point, right?
Yeah, all right. The last point.
No, I just wanted to make another point to you that you would be hard-pressed to find a country in the world now that does not have a national insurance scheme or national insurance fund.
Which is basically
to say that it was essentially part of a realization across the world that we needed to have such an institution. So I think it was good that Errol Barrow made that realization. The point, however, is that had he not done so, it is highly likely that it would have been done subsequently, because it was all about an era in which we were discovering that kind of social protection that was necessary.
All right, good. I have no quarrel with that. I didn't know. I have no quarrel with that. Let me get these statues, though. Let me ask you a question.
Mm-hmm.
You believe a black lawyer would go and represent that white police that murdered George Floyd off like George of, innit?
I wouldn't be surprised.
Well, you wouldn't be surprised.
I wouldn't be surprised at all.
But no, give me a reason why.
Because what I have found is that the black lawyer who represents Floyd, the black lawyer who represents the policeman would appreciate that there is a substantial monetary gain to be based on the fact that he is black and he's prepared to take on such a case. So what I would suggest is that if he does take on a case like that, his fees would be sufficiently high enough to assuage his conscience. And, you know, my argument is always that your fees would have to be high enough to allow you to buy more comfortable pillows so you can sleep at night.
Good.
You remember a few years ago, there was one of these home stars, what they call them, like a TV thing on mm-hmm. daytime soaps.
Mm-hmm.
He is said to have had sexual intercourse with a minor in Barbados on Awani Hotels. I don't know if you recall that case.
All right. Let me go on.
But who did he go for? He went for a black female defense attorney that was one of the top QCs in the United Kingdom, but it was noteworthy that she was also, whether she was a woman or not, so she was black. Because I think he understood that the best lawyer that you can get is one that can stand before a jury and put your case in a way that would remove any issue of sympathies and whatnot. So I wouldn't be surprised at all.
Yeah, because at that time, as you said, as long as you could get a dollar to buy a better pillow, you could get all your consciousness and black consciousness.
Which is part of it. I mean, this is an issue that I also address for my own self as a political consultant. I mean, what right do I have working for clients that I don't support? But, you know, in the final analysis, you have to make a living. And I don't delude myself that part of the reason that some of my clients are with me is because they believe that I can be more convincing in the court of public opinion.
All right.
But you got to balance it. So I would say
All right, let me finish.
Yeah. Anyhow, I don't think that was the point you were making initially. So all right. Let me not
I get you the point now. You the point now. We're talking about there's a lot of black consciousness and pulling down statues.
Mm-hmm.
There's a statue that should be taken down now. There was a who represented a planter that shot a little boy in St. Thomas.
Mm-hmm.
And he's a hero today. That same attorney, there was a man by the name of Clarence Wickham that had to run for his life out of Barbados because of the same attorney.
Mm-hmm.
He's still a hero. And I have no more to say today. You know who your grandfather got punished by, and where he had to run.
He got punished by. I also know that my grandfather forgave the individual who assisted in his persecution.
So why you can't forgive Nelson unless he statue?
But that ain't a problem. That's different.
But that's different because that's a statue of a hero that represented a planter that shot a black.
But he's their hero, not my. He's their hero, not mine.
But I tell you, that planter, that statue of that hero represents the planter that shot a little boy and St. Thomas and called him a monkey. And that is all they have to say.
But then you understand what I mean about attorneys having to make a living.
But that's what I tell you. Who was concerned? I never see her not for the same Elliot Martley's father. His father was responsible for saving the same Crawford from a judgment that was done by the same man. All the liberals that was preaching on behalf of the working class, that hero was trying to get rid of.
Bring the conversation home to Barbados, and let's look at some of the lawyers that have taken some interesting cases over time.
I deal with statues.
All I can say is that the fact that an attorney may take a controversial case, it doesn't make him any less good as an attorney.
But all I am saying,
you remember some time ago somebody shot the sun.
That statue would be a street should come down. Pull it down.
I can't agree with you because I don't think that the case of which you speak is the totality of that individual's contribution or lack thereof. I don't think that the role he played in my grandfather's prosecution is the totality of the contribution he made or lack thereof. Because I believe that ultimately you have to weigh a person's contribution based on the things that they did in their professional life and the things that they did in their political life. And, you know, there can be some balance one way or the other. No?
You be here on argument that Nelson didn't like Barbados. Would you agree that there are Barbadians and Barbados who don't like certain parts of Barbados?
Yeah.
Good. All right, my case closed.
All right, sir. Good chatting with you. Happy Monday. Take care. Down to Brass Tacks. Good morning.
Hello. Hi. Good morning, Peter.
Good morning.
You know that. You want me, right?
I hear Auntie America is messaging online and telling me that I am a prostitute selling my service. He didn't use that word. He used the next word that Michelle wouldn't allow me to use. Okay. Selling my services to people that I oppose. Auntie America has a friend that is also in the business of sales, and I want to ask Auntie America if his friend would sell products to people for whom he has no love for, because I do recall that he has done some figurines. His auntie's friend. That's a rather controversial character. But anyhow, that's another matter. Yes, sir, go right ahead. How I have to apologize to you?
I just apologize, man. I don't understand you. I still say apologize. Mm-hmm. I said that you owe me.
You say I owe you? I have had to defend you so much last week. I don't understand how you become so unpopular.
You still owe me, though, because when I put on the phone, your listenership went up, and you get high ratings.
Everybody cussing you.
And I still break. Right. So I think that
I am at a loss to understand why you engender so much discord in the minds of people, because I don't have a difficulty with your contribution.
No, because I think for myself. Problem. When you think for yourself and you don't let political party or you don't follow people blindly. Mm. Look, I tell you this here, right? I remember when I discussed with the Prime Minister, now she was in opposition, that I'm making my move to join her party. And I only joined in the party because of Mayor Amar Motley. And she was in opposition and my party at the time was strong in government, right? But I like Ms. Motley so much that I decide to put my support, right, and beg people to support me, Motley. Mm-hmm. Everybody know that. And when I make my move, only three people really, really, really did know. That is my representative, Ms. Cynthia Ford, mm-hmm. and a lady that worked in Cynthia Ford's office. just let me put this here, Ms. Taylor, and Mayor Motley. And there was the only three people that know that I did really make a move. And when I make my move, I was deep-seated at that time in the Democrat Labour Party, and they do me, not a fella, if I tell anybody that anybody from the Democrat Labour Party did me an injustice, I'd be telling lies upon them. Mm-hmm. Right? I went solely because of Ms. Motley. And I think at the time, I gave the Democratic Party 27 years, and I like Ms. Motley, and I withdraw my support and beg people to support Ms. Motley. Right? Not that I hate the Dems. And I would tell you to say, Peter, give me just 2-4 minutes to clear the air, right? And I would tell you this. When I joined the Baptist Labour Party, I was still getting a little crumb. I was still getting a little crumb falling off the Democratic Labour Party table coming my way. If you doubt me, you could ask the same call that I just put down. I was still getting a little crumb. You understand what I'm saying? Because I didn't follow. I didn't ask to leave. I left. I didn't get pushed. I jumped. However, I know, and I can walk you through this here, right? For my friend, and I believe he's still my friend, right? Tall boy. Because he had talked for me last week. And this is not back and forth, man, because this is the last I will say on this. All right? When I joined, right, tall boy used to be my walking partner around the Baptist Labour Party. Because he did the honest, but they really, really know that they're so deep-seated in the Labour Party, and they feel safe around tall boy. You understand me? And he still today is my friend. But he don't like the fact that I say, hey, if the Democratic Labour Party regroup, if they regroup, and you don't like it either, if the Democratic Labour Party regroup, the Baptist Labour Party got problems. I'm not saying that.
I don't like it?
Election. I'm not saying, well, you said they get their love again after the call election. And I'm saying to you and tall boy, if the Democratic Labour Party regroup, the Barbados Labour Party got problems.
And I don't disagree with that.
And I will say this to you as well and to my friend tall boy. The honest way Ms. Motley could have captured the range of government is because of the large support that was fostered on her by the Democratic Labour Party members and supporters and well-wishers. Don't get tired. I believe there are more Dems in Barbados than Labourites. That's my belief. I might be wrong. Right? I'm not a good friend of mine telling me I usually be wrong anyhow. But that is my belief. And I will say this to you. I also remember a big mass beating, right, in Oystins at night. It was a national meeting in the last general election. The guy from, I think he from the Deacons Avenue, right? A guy that supported the Baptist Labour Party, that also was deep-seated in the Democratic Labour Party, a fellow called Levon Eversley or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
You know the name?
I've heard the name.
He went up on the platform on Oystins, and he was booed and clapped down. And a police sergeant come to me and said, Wesley boy, you see all the noise that wanna keep, that you saw? That is the slaughter thing the Baptist Labour Party we got for people like you. Mm-hmm. Your services has come to an end.
I listened to the speech.
You understand what I'm saying?
I listened to Rudon's speech, but the challenge Rudon faced was not... The challenge came basically when we started speaking about David Thompson.
But you know he was clapped down.
I saw, but I told you it was when he started to speak about David Thompson and his personal relationship with Thompson.
If a Baptist Labour Party deep-seated person was speaking about David Thompson, they would be allowed to speak. And this police sergeant came to me and said,
I didn't think, honestly, that the public had an appetite at the time for hearing about how good and great David Thompson was.
Let me flow. I also remember, this is Wesley speaking, right? And at this time, I really don't bother. I also remember leading up to the general election, the last general election, people used to hustle home at 10 o'clock to go online to see what Patrick's serving up. You remember that, too?
I remember that, yeah.
And Patrick had a following of sometimes over 4,000
because it was
people.
Scandalous.
You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, it was scandalous.
But do you know the same Patrick?
But did they watch it Natalie, too?
No, hold on, fair enough. But the same Patrick, all right, when he was apparently left out in the cold, he come back and tell people on the same media, listen, don't support no political parties. Don't put one of faith in the politicians. Mm-hmm. Follow God.
That is not unsung advice.
No. Hold on, man.
Because it says that Jesus never fails.
And then he had a big cuss out. I cussed Edmund Henson, and then they call you and say, oh, come, Patrick, boy, come, take this little thing here. But it didn't stop there either. When Patrick thought that he did not reach the Baptist, the party status, Parliament, one guy pretty old. They said, no, you can't have custody.
Tell me, Wesley.
Let me land it quickly.
Because you're circling around out of oxygen and fuel.
Somebody promised Patrick, hey, that foolishness will never happen again, man. You're free to come back to the Parliament and sit down and have a drink like anybody else. You know, you went back.
Yeah.
But instead of one guy putting you off your promises, poof, put you off. And the next occasion.
Well, I think, Wesley, you and Patrick need to settle your issue off the radio.
I'm just telling you, you let people cuss me last week.
No, he said that they cussed you. They were cussing you online mostly. Most of the comments I got about you were online, WhatsApp and whatnot.
The thing that really ticked me off is when my friend Tallboy said that I'm looking for something and I ain't getting nothing. And think, buddy, I ain't looking for nothing.
You know, I hear that all the time.
I ain't looking.
But Wesley, what are you taking on that? You should know in this business, I is here in every one of the 14 Caribbean territories that is working, that Peter looking for something, and when he don't get it, he get vexed.
I ain't looking, though.
Up to now, the Dems are of the opinion.
Because I ain't thinking for the one, make it abundantly clear. I forget that. I'll be happy doing it.
No.
You want something?
You can't be sad.
I ain't got no time to ask.
You can't be sad.
I ain't got no time to kiss up and lick up. I think, Peter, the truth is, right? I understand the characteristics of a politician, okay? And I also know that a supporter get treated different to the political class.
All right.
Look, all the political class that come over on both sides of the fence.
Wesley, I want you to do me a favor. Next time you call me on this program, I'm on Friday. Let's have a conversation about Calypso.
But you promised me who's loitering. You promised the thing there.
Who's loitering?
Who's loitering? You said that you're going to sit up Monday. When I asked you who's loitering in Parliament.
I told you that we can have that conversation, but I haven't said that I was going to speak in that regard.
You tell me today that, let me talk about that.
Right, but I was hoping that you were telling me who you think is loitering.
No.
But the problem is that we done talk for 10 minutes and we ain't discussed nothing about loitering. We talk about Wesley, so... Friday, when you call Friday, let's talk about who loitering or who ain't loitering. But let's talk about that up front. Wesley, look, you have to understand, right, that the business that you are in, and I say business, this business of public conversation and discourse, you will be criticized. There will be people who will feel that when you move from one party to another, it is for something. The fact of the matter is that there are some people in this world that you cannot convince that the world is flat. Sorry, that the world is round. You get my point?
But the point,
Wesley, is that you have to appreciate, you heard my first caller and my interaction with that first caller, right?
Uh-huh.
That guy has views in his mind that are fixed. And I have given up this idea that I can persuade people to think the way that I think in relation to other matters. There are Dems, every single time I say something about Frendo Stewart, there are people who message on this WhatsApp chat and say, I still vexed that I didn't get a sign that I didn't want. Wesley, the reality is that people will say what they say. All I will tell you is that make sure in the final analysis when you look in the mirror on morning, the person that you see there is that you recognize and that you are true to yourself. And it don't matter thereafter. What I will tell you is that I am not convinced that the idea of public interaction, not necessarily at your level, but at the level of a politician, has an appetite for jumping and jumping back. That much I can say. But what I would tell you nonetheless is that, you know, make sure that you're true to yourself and don't worry about the haters. The haters will hate. Wesley, why don't you do me a favor? Can you just WhatsApp me your number? Because there's a young lady trying to get in contact with you and she's actually quite attractive. So I think she's someone that you would want to speak to. So just WhatsApp me because I seem to have lost your number. I know you have mine. So WhatsApp me and let me put her in contact with you. Sadly, I think she wants to speak to you about a professional and not a personal matter. So sorry to disappoint you. But she's attractive nonetheless. So the conversation will be one that you will enjoy. Thanks a lot for calling, Wesley. We take a break and come right back.